Welcome to this 19-part series of Business Podcasts by David Maister, exploring the key principles and practices found in his new book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker.
Hello, I'm David Maister. In this series of podcasts, I'm proud to present a special 19-part series of the audiobook version of my new book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker. If you're interested in purchasing a copy of the book in hardback, it is now available from both Amazon.com and at my website at davidmaister.com/store. This is Chapter 12, A Natural Manager, from my book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker. This is another example, in a completely different setting, of how a skilled manager goes about getting his organization to reach for and accomplish high standards. Ask yourself whether this manager of an exercise gym is using similar or different approaches than the example in the previous chapter of my colleague at the Harvard Business School in getting his people to stay true to the disciplines they need to follow in order to succeed. At the time I wrote this, Jerry Labatt was the manager of an exercise gym in downtown Boston, managing 4 full-time and 4 part-time personal trainers. What follows is his description, given in March 2006, of his managerial approach, along with my comments on the lessons that managers can take from Jerry's experience. He says, "I never wanted to get involved in business. Born in Brazil, I've lived in the USA since I was 12 years old. I remember coming in on the plane, not speaking a word of English, and asking the cabin attendant for some agua, water, and she brought me some Sprite. And I thought to myself, this is going to be a great country. You're asked for water and you get Sprite. Wow." Jerry carries on, "I got my undergraduate degree as an exercise physiologist, went to work at a major chain of gyms, and then moved on to the place I work now. When I took over, the staff was dissatisfied with their hours, how they were being treated and cared for, their scheduling and their pay. A trainer would typically work from 6 a.m. till 8 p.m., with some hours off during the day. Even if you didn't have a client, the owners wanted you to stay on the premises until quitting time. They would do things like make an appointment without telling you, so that you had to change your personal plans without notice. I've always believed that this is a business that is run by the trainers. If they do things right, your business will flourish. So, to make money, I had to increase the level of service to the clients, and the only way to do that was to improve the quality of the job for the trainers. I had to change the environment they were working in. Before I came here, the owners did all of the hiring of the trainers. I went to them and made my case that I couldn't really manage the business well unless I could choose the people I believed in, people I thought could meet my standards, and people who would operate the way I wanted them to operate. I didn't want to insult the owners, but I put my case in terms of improving their bottom line. I told them, 'You're not in the center of all of this. I am. I know everyone's personality. I can figure out who will communicate well with the other trainers and who won't.' Anyway, the owners, to their credit, accepted my argument and let me do my own hiring. When I first came in, all 3 of the existing trainers were just in the process of giving their notices of resignation because of the way they'd been treated. I persuaded 2 of them to postpone their departure so I could do some new hiring. Actually, the first new hire after I came in was someone whom the owners had selected, but I could see that he had what it took to do well. I liked him right away. The owners then told me they'd hired a second guy. When I asked him about what he wanted to do with his career, it was clear that our gym was obviously just a transitional job for him. I told the owners it wasn't going to work. The owners said, 'Give it 6 to 12 months. I did work with the guy, and he did become a good trainer. I supported him in getting his certification, knowing that it would only speed up the day he would resign to move on, and that's exactly what happened. I had 2 part-timers I could use, but I knew I needed to begin hiring. In this industry, there's a lot of bait and switch with employees. They're told one thing before they're hired, but then discover that the reality is different once they begin work. For example, people are promised 40-hour work weeks, but the reality is that it's almost always closer to 60-hour weeks. It's common for every single person on staff to feel cheated within weeks of coming to work. Trainers are a special kind of person. They have strong personalities. They're athletic, they play sports, and as a result, some of them can be a little rough around the edges in dealing with clients. I only wanted to hire people who shared my philosophy of personal training. Some gyms and some trainers are just out to get clients to sign up for more classes, but I'm committed to passing on the knowledge I have about exercise, fitness, the body, and health. I believe that you train because you want to educate clients for their lifetime. You want to give them things they can do and will use on their own and use for the rest of their lives. A lot of competitors in this business just get caught up in the fitness numbers, percentage of body fat, for example. But it's not about numbers. It's about helping people integrate new things into their lives. I always ask myself, can this client do this repetitively? Let's make him understand that it's a commitment he has to make. When I hire people, I look for this attitude. I ask them, if you were not doing this, what else would you be doing? I'm looking for people who feel passionate about all this. The body is so amazing, and the more you learn, the more you want to know. The adaptations it goes through as you stress it and develop it are really fascinating. And when I hire, I'm looking for people who share that fascination. When I ask an interviewee a question, I can always tell if I'm getting a rehearsed answer. I require that every new hire has a bachelor's degree in physiology, not just a certification. Many other gyms will only require trainees to have certificate, not here. I knew that I had to set out to make my gym the best, and that wasn't going to be defined as having the most operating sites, which is a common goal, but by achieving the highest levels of client satisfaction. My first full-time hire was somebody who had heard from a friend that we were becoming a great place to work. It meant for this person a 45-minute drive each way from his hometown, and I asked him if he could handle that. He said, no problem. He really wanted to come to work here. I began by laying down my expectations with everyone. I was very clear on the hours expected. I showed everyone exactly how to clean the rock and room, how to set appointments, how to talk to clients, and how to resolve conflicts. I created an evaluation form, which I went over in detail with everyone. It contained 5 categories. Punctuality, for example. My inflexible rule is that the trainer must be there before the client. So if it's a 3 p.m. appointment, I expect the trainer to be in the gym ready by 2:45. I ask everyone, is all this clear? Do you understand my expectations? I don't have a problem monitoring performance. If something is not being done to my standards, I come to them and I ask, do I have to show you how to do it again? Do you have any questions on how to do it? If not, then I expect you to do it. It's black or white. I devised a training program for the trainers. For 2 weeks, they have to be clients at the gym and be trained by existing trainers. I want them to have a healthy dose of what it feels like to be a client and to think about how you like to be talked to, recognized, and responded to. Then the new people have to guide one of the experienced trainers through their fitness routine so the experienced employees can help the new people and give them feedback on their training approach and style. While they train each other, a bonding takes place. They come to respect each other and support each other, which makes for a better workplace and a more smoothly functioning operation. I talk to my trainers a great deal about their self-growth. I ask them what their vision is for themselves and for their career. I ask them where they think our profession of personal training is going. Among other reasons, I do it to learn more myself. The people I hire are usually straight out of college, and they've heard the new things the schools are teaching, and I want to know. To get a new person started, I ask one of our regular clients if he or she would be willing to be the guinea pig and have the new person as a trainer. I promise the client that if he or she doesn't like the new person, it'll be a freebie. There'll be no charge. I've never had to invoke that. The client always accepts the person and pays. The essence of training is getting people out of their comfort zone. And that's not only what I do with my clients physically, it's what I do with my trainers in their jobs. I fail sometimes around here because not all the trainers want to grow. Some of them just want to train. Once a month, I get all the trainers around a table. I give them the big picture of what's happening in the business overall, what's happening well, and what we need to improve. I try to light a fire under them, telling them what the competition is doing. And I remind them that in this business, you must re-earn your reputation every day. I ask them to contribute to the meetings. I ask them to bring a new theory of training, or a new idea for an exercise, or a way to deal with a specific client training challenge. We discuss client problems, physiology, and the administration of the business. For example, we had a big discussion last week about sit-ups, with everyone sharing their views about which muscles were really involved, the best way to develop the complete set of muscles, and so on. At the meetings, I hand out responsibilities for things we need to get done, cleaning, renewals processing, and so on. I ask for volunteers for each task. Everybody has to do something above and beyond the training. but I'll assign it if no one volunteers. I rotate tasks so people don't get stuck with one thing. I always ask them, is there anything I can do as the manager to make your job better? If you don't tell me what's wrong, I can't help to fix it. Last week, at a meeting that the owners attended, I told the group that I was going to leave the room so they could discuss my performance and then give me some feedback when I came back in. The owners were amazed that I would do that, but it worked very well. The main thing the part-time people said was that they wanted more help getting more bookings with clients. So I walked them through the difficulties. Their part-time schedule may not match up the weekly schedule the client has, so matching them up is difficult. But I told them I would do my best for them, but I could not promise to make the problem go away completely. The part-time staff is one of my areas of weakness so far. I should spend more time and creativity with them to make them feel more a part of the team. In 2004, the owners realized they had to do something about compensation. A normal target for a trainer is to have 32 appointments per week, plus 8 hours of coverage, i.e. other duties in the gym. I presented an idea of a bonus structure if the trainer saw more than a certain number of clients per week. It was modified a little, but it was accepted, and it has really pleased the staff. I don't have control of the salaries here, so it's hard for me to discuss them with the trainers. I tell them, if you want more, then show me the extra performance that I can tell the owners about. Help me create the reasons and make the case so I can go to the owners on your behalf and fight for you. I had one trainer who was just not a team player. He didn't share his load in cleaning up after himself and so on. He was knowledgeable, but he just wasn't doing what I believe in, sharing his knowledge with his clients. I told him that these things had to be improved. I don't compromise my standards. He said, I can't do that. So we sat down and explored his options. I said, I don't want you to leave. I like you. But if you can't meet my standards, you're not going to fit in around here. I continued to work with him because I wanted to make sure everyone gets a fair chance. After 4 months, I stopped assigning him work. He didn't take it well. He said, it's not fair. I'm a great trainer. And I said, yes, you are, but you're not a great employee. I want all my trainers to become great employees so that if they ever leave here and go work somewhere else, the next employer will say that he or she was well trained. Eventually, he got it, and he left with no bad feelings. I think with all of this, we've created a welcoming atmosphere for our clients. We think we've created something they want to be part of. It's very professional, and we don't fool around with our training, but it's not an intimidating place. It's not a complex process. I have a rule that every trainer must know every client's name within 2 or 3 days, whether he works with that person or not. We have a total of about 100 clients. I want everyone to watch what other clients are doing in their training, whether they serve them directly or not. That way, if the client's regular trainer can't make it, any other trainer can pick it up and know the exercises and the levels that the client's used to. I also changed the health history and chart system so that if we have to substitute a trainer, there'll be no problems knowing the special needs of each client. I'm constantly in touch with all of our clients, making sure that if they have even the smallest concern, it's easy and comfortable to talk directly to me. I'm now being asked by the owners to train the trainers and managers in other locations. I'm personally doing about 30 client appointments a week, and then on average working an additional 30 hours managing the business. We now have 4 full-time and 4 part-time trainers, 107 clients and 159 appointments per week. That's 33% more business than the same time last year, and it's growing still. The owners are very happy with the turnaround. Both as a business school professor and as a consultant, it's been my job to teach people how to be effective managers and how to build successful businesses. Jerry seems to have figured it all out on his own. Jerry implicitly refers to some commonly taught management principles. I can't and won't inventory them all. Maybe you can add to the list. But here are some. The key to giving your clients a great experience is making your people want to give that to them. You can't delight clients with unhappy people. Hiring people who share your philosophy, values, point of view, and approach makes managing them a lot easier. You need to be very clear about what your philosophy is. The key to successful management is in the hiring. If you don't get the right people on and off the bus right up front, you won't be able to implement your strategy. Hire for passion and attitude. Never compromise your hiring standards just to meet a volume need. Set high minimums in entry qualifications. To get the best out of people, you need to have clear, enforced standards and an empathetic, supportive style. One without the other won't work. Even if people are going to leave, take the high road in dealing with them. All your other people are watching. Never misrepresent, exaggerate, distort, or lie just to get something done or to get someone to join you. People will find out the truth sooner or later, probably sooner, and there will be no benefit if they think you've misled them. You must help your people learn that there is more to serving a client than being technically skilled at what you do. If you focus on being the best, the revenue growth and the profits will come, and your people will enjoy themselves more. Don't be soft. Have high operating standards that are clearly communicated and strictly enforced. Then give people the freedom to meet the standards without being micromanaged. Work at helping people actually experience what it's like to be a client. They'll do a better job as a result of it. Work at team bonding by finding ways for people to work together and by getting together to discuss common issues. Learn from your people. Let them teach you what they know and what they've discovered as ways to improve your operation. Commit to helping your people grow professionally. Don't let them cruise. If you want people to be accountable, go first yourself. Let them evaluate your performance and let the results be publicly known. No one expects you to solve everyone's problem as a manager. All people want to know is that you're prepared to work with them to help overcome the barriers and obstacles. In all of your emphasis on working with your people, you must never lose contact with your clients. Make it easy for them to talk to you and to raise any concerns they may have. And even though you are a manager, keep practicing your profession to some degree if you can. It will help you relate to both your people and to your clients. Now, how's that for a quick and really helpful MBA course? And of course, all these general lessons apply to other workplaces, even amongst highly paid people with advanced degrees in glamorous professions, even though they don't always like to admit it. The lesson is even more powerful. Without managers like Jerry, standards will never be upheld and strategies will never be implemented. The key to strategy is finding or developing more people who can do what Jerry can do. This concludes this chapter of my book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker. If you're interested in ordering a copy of the book in its printed form, visit Amazon.com or my website at davidmaester.com/store.